As we continue to look at the results of yesterday's primary, we've invited Lisa Fernandez, Vice President at Resolute Consulting, and Paul Bentz, Vice President of Research and Strategy at High Ground, for more analysis and feedback about yesterday's primary results, which one of our guests in the first hour described as schizophrenic. So, Paul, let's start with schizophrenic, but let's start with the governor's race, which wasn't so schizophrenic. Doug Ducey won pretty easily, and then on the Democratic side, David Garcia emerged.
Yeah, Garcia won by 16 points. I think most folks thought that that was about what was going to happen. I don't know if they thought the margin was going to be big. While a lot of other races were pretty schizophrenic, that one was pretty predictable.
Lisa, what about when we look at that particular race? Because it seemed as though the Republican side knew pretty early on that David Garcia was the one candidate they were scared of based on the amount of money spent.
Yes, there must have been a lot of polling done on the RGA, the Republican Governors Association, to attack Garcia as early as they did. I think the Republicans identified that there was an engagement factor where Garcia connected with a new group of voters. Paul and I were just talking about, you know, it's interesting to see that we'll see the numbers of how many new voters participate in it. But they identified that early to say this is going to be probably the candidate that can engage and excite people.
Paul, do you think the RGA is scared of Garcia? Do you think they're just trying to do a preemptive strike with all this money to try to knock him down before they even got to the general?
I think it's the latter. I think it's a more of a preemptive strike. I mean, Arizona has about a 12 to 14 point Republican advantage in the gubernatorial election. It's a lower turnout election than, say, a presidential election. I think part of it is they also were rooting for Garcia because I think for them, Farley would have been a more formidable candidate.
Lisa, do you think that Farley would have been a more formidable candidate for the governor?
I think Farley had a background and record and experience that translates very well on the state side. He was in the legislature. He was in leadership. He knows the state issues. So on a apples-to-apples comparison, they would have been able to, I think, argue and connect on issues a little better. But Garcia really does bring something to the table that our candidates for governor haven't before.
Lisa, does Garcia have name recognition, having been the Democratic nominee for superintendent?
Being on the ballot is always helpful. If somebody has voted for you before, that's always going to be helpful, and that gives you a bit of an advantage. Running for superintendent, as you know, it's much lower on the ballot. There's a lot of drop-off, but I think there's familiarity with his name, and people know him from being around and staying around over the last 4 years. So there is a level of familiarity that I think he has.
But the question that folks are asking is, if he could not win for superintendent public instruction, how is he ever going to win for governor? That's the biggest question right now.
Is Governor Ducey, whether it's David Garcia or had it been Steve Farley, is Governor Ducey truly vulnerable?
I don't think so, but we are going to see. I think the blue wave is real, and I do think that we're seeing that right now. The turnout is projected to be the highest primary turnout we've had in modern history. It's looking to be maybe as high as 32%. Now, that does mean two-thirds of voters did not show up yesterday. But Democrats were overperforming traditional turnout by about 6 points. I think you saw that in a lot of other races that we'll talk about. It'll be interesting to see. But they still have a lot to overcome to win the governor's race in the general election.
Well, Lisa, what do you think Garcia has to do to overcome all of those sort of built-in disadvantages and win on Election Day?
Well, I agree that there is going to be money spent in this. Ducey is going to be running as if he's running from behind, regardless of maybe where he's at. I think his numbers are upside down. I think Garcia really has to stay on message and drive home the point, what has been going wrong in Arizona over the last 4 years, and be able to point to specifics that, you know, we as Democrats think that if the governor and the legislature could have done something on education, could have, you know, not put their focus on corporations and tax cuts for them, that we could have really furthered the state. And I think if we stay on message that way, Arizona voters are going to understand that.
And Paul, let's stay on message with education. We mentioned, of course, that David Garcia had been the nominee for superintendent. The superintendent races, I think, were surprises on both sides to some extent. I think people thought that Diane Douglas would struggle a number of challengers. But on the Democratic side, David Shapiro, much more name recognition, ends up losing to Kathy Hoffman. What do you make of that overall?
Well, I think that was one of the biggest shocks of the night. I think most folks and political insiders thought Shapiro probably ran a better campaign, knew what he was doing, was likely to be the winner. There was a lot more mystery on the Republican side on who that was going to be. But Hoffman is a teacher. I think we're also seeing a lot of boost for female candidates. As Lisa said, I think this is the year of the woman. I think we saw a lot of female candidates really do well, and it was a bit of a shock. But the ironic part of that is that we saw on the Republican side two seated female elected officials be replaced for the general election by men.
And on the Democratic side, we were talking about this offline. On the Democratic side, we saw two first-time female candidates beat out men, both for superintendent, as you were talking about, Kathy and David Shapira, but on Corporation Commission. Sandra Kennedy was a top vote-getter. She has obviously served on the Corporation Commission before, but Bill Mundell had as well. They ran as a slate, and Kira Sears was able to. I mean, I don't know if it's held steady, but she is a second top vote-getter. So those are two first-time candidates beating out men. So it's quite a contrast.
4 years ago, there was a lot of speculation that David Garcia could actually win that race, especially after Diane Douglas knocked off John Hubenthal. He of course, didn't. Do either of you think that Kathy Hoffman could maybe do what Garcia couldn't and defeat, be it Frank Riggs or Bob Branch?
Absolutely, I think so. We talked about the year of the woman. Education. Education is on the forefront of Arizonans' mind right now, not just with the education initiative, but everything that happened with the Red for Ed movement. And, you mentioned on your last segment that there is an uptick of teachers running. I think there is excitement to vote for pro-education candidates, and she's going to be the benefactor of that. Mm-hmm.
All of our polling shows that education is the number one issue facing the state, and it has been for 4 years. I think rhetorically, both Branch and Riggs are probably off-brand for the general election audience on what they're looking for education. So I think Hoffman has a chance. That's one of the races, if we were handicapping it right now, even with the Republican advantage, there's a shot that she could win this.
And let's go back to what Lisa had to started us off on with Corporation Commission, Paul. Is it a stunner that Tom Farese, not that he didn't necessarily get one of the top two vote percentages, but he seemed to get pretty smoked as well?
A distant fourth is the answer there. And I think that's pretty surprising. You look at Olson has run on sort of the ethics and really pushed that, and whereas Farese is more wrapped up in sort of the allegations of who did what when it comes to who's paying for the Corporation Commission races, I think he was very much swept up in that. Glassman raised the most money and was very active on social media and other places talking about the pledge to have ethics, and I think they really played that up, and that really put Farese in a tough spot.
Lisa, I'm intrigued by the Glassman thing because we talked about it last night in the coverage we had, that Glassman ran against John McCain as a pretty liberal Democrat, and now he had County Attorney Bill Montgomery endorsing him for Corporation Commission. What do you make of that?
We're all intrigued by Rodney Glassman. I don't think I have an answer for that. I would say it'll be an interesting Corporation Commission race that'll be coming up, how voters are interpreting what's happening with the Clean Energy Initiative, how it relates to the Corporation Commission, the people who are being elected. APS is putting a lot of money in for not only their candidates, but their anti-clean money, clean energy. So I think it's going to be a really interesting race, and no comment on Rodney Glassman other than that.
Well, how do you guys see that race shaping up? And we've talked about some other races that could be affected by ballot measures, especially as they relate to education. But Lisa, as you mentioned, there's the clean energy, assuming that it makes the ballot and survives its court challenge. How do you see that and maybe what people know about the Corporation Commission playing into, you know, how those four candidates, two Dems and two Republicans, actually perform in November?
So I would say people are more engaged and a little more understanding of the Corporation Commission over the last year for, you know, not so great reasons of what some of the commissioners did. Being in the press, being on the front page of the paper, court hearings, all of these things happening, people are understanding, okay, well, maybe we need to be replacing people. Maybe there needs to be a level of ethics. But also, if they can relate utilities, solar, all of these things that the Corporation Commission oversees, I think people are going to be engaged to vote. And, of course, the Clean Energy Initiative will be a part of that.
Paul, what do you think?
I think our polling has shown that there is quite a few voters that believe that there's been corruptive influences over the Corporation Commission. There's been a lack of trust in the Corporation Commission over the last few years, in addition to the fact that you have the word corporation in the name, which carries its own bit of baggage. I think we're probably going towards – we'll see a split on that. I think we'll end up – there's a likelihood that we may end up with one Republican and one Democrat winning that race.
Paul, not to kick someone when he's down, but does Farese's weak showing indicate that really he was propped up allegedly by APS, the fact that all that money really made a difference for him?
I can't speak to that. I think there was a lot of races 4 years ago that folks – that the money really helped a lot. I think what it comes down to is what narrative you fall into, and I think he definitely fell into that outside influence, bought and paid for narrative that I think injured him pretty significantly.
I want to talk about a couple of lower ballot races, including some for the state legislature. There was a lot of talk leading up to yesterday about, for example, Don Shooter, who is in a primary in the Senate. He did not do well yesterday. A few other legislators who've been in the news for not so great reasons, including Paul Mosley, who was caught on tape bragging about how fast he drives, David Stringer in the Prescott area, who made some comments that were widely seen as racist. And then you have David Gowan, who is the former House Speaker, who was caught up in some financial scandals when he was Speaker of the House. Some of those candidates look like they're getting back in. Gowan and Stringer, Mosley and Shooter do not. Lisa, what do you make of sort of how voters looked at some of those candidates?
Well, these are Paul's people. I don't know if you want to weigh in first. These are all of your scandals with your party.
Yeah. Thanks for that. No, as a resident of LD13, I think someone said it best when they said Don Shooter is universally known, and he's known for the wrong reason. And so you look, and Chad Campbell said it best on the last hour, it is schizophrenic. You have two folks that were caught up in pretty public scandals that have been shown the door, and two more that have been caught up in the past in things that appear to be that are going to come back to the legislature. And it does come down to what do these districts look like? And we have very safe districts on both Republican and Democrat side. And so sometimes if you just keep speaking to your base, you can be okay.
And I think it's also interesting to, you know, we'll over the coming days and weeks, maybe try to understand, is there a level of corruption that people are okay with? Or is it more than we have other candidates to choose from? You know, there were multiple candidates in LD13. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
There was also a lot of money spent in favor of Kerr. Kerr's from a farming family from Buckeye. Two-thirds of that district is in Maricopa County. A third is in Yuma. She's pretty well regarded. I think in that race, the other shocking one is that Joanne Osborne's in second place, defeating Darren Mitchell. On the House side, he's been there for several years, the M&M Montenegro and Mitchell team. And Mitchell was a presumptive candidate for House Speaker, and it looks like he may not return to the legislature.
At least we need to wrap up pretty quickly. But what about some Democrats in the legislature? We saw some surprising incumbents lose.
So I would say there is, as I said at the beginning, excitement, engagement, whether it's because there are competitive primaries where there haven't been before, or, you know, the year of the woman. But I would say LD24, the incumbent was knocked out. That was Ken Clark. He had a late and somebody running with him who also lost. We had minority man, the top vote getter, and a woman who Jennifer Longden, who is representing really the disabled community that has never been represented in the legislature. I think those are really big shockers on the, well, maybe not for some of us watching the races, but for others, for incumbent and slate candidates to lose.
So very briefly to you both on the legislature, we're going to see some new faces. Are we going to see any flips? Are you seeing any races? Not even, don't have to give specifics, but do you see it actually turning? Do the Democrats gain some seats based on what we saw last night?
I think that's likely. There's several districts that are sort of swing districts that have a closer registration participation advantage. You're seeing Democrats pick up, if they somewhere pick up between 3 and 4 points, which they are right now, we will see a few that will flip. Big one is LD18. Bowie actually got more primary votes from the Democrat primary than Schmuck got in the Republican primary, which is pretty shocking.
And we are absolutely going to see seats flipping. The Senate is going to be very close. Democrats have a chance of taking that over. And on the House side, I think we'll be inching closer to an even split.
Terrific. Lisa Fernandez, Vice President of Resolute Consulting. Paul Bentz, Vice President of Research and Strategy at High Ground. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.